Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
You're listening to Damon Bruce and Ray Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
All right, welcome in. Good Tuesday afternoon to you. John Dickinson joined by Larry Kruger this afternoon.
Hey.
We lead you up to Warriors basketball tonight right here on 95.7 The Game. Warriors and the Charlotte Hornets. Larry, yeah, we've known each other for a long time. We couldn't quite figure if it was the second or the third. I think it's the third show we've done together.
Third show of me and JD. Well, JD, it's always great to see you, man. We've talked many times on the Niner pregame because
yeah.
You're our boots on the ground trusted reporter from inside the stadium with me and Lo. But yeah, this might be our third show all time. I'm excited, man.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And yeah, we'll be doing that again here on New Year's Day as I'll be in Vegas for the Niners and the Raiders. That's going to be a lot of fun, quite the experience there, and a lot to get into over the next 4 hours. Peter King's going to join us as he does each and every week in this slot here on 95.7 The Game. 3 o'clock for Peter King, so he's coming up in an hour. Anthony Slater of The Athletic as well is going to join us coming up at 4 o'clock. Covers the Warriors, obviously. We'll talk about everything going on with the Dubs as they try and find their way without Steph Curry. Game 2 of the 8-game road trip is coming up here as well. Or 8-game homestand, rather. Good thing for the Warriors, it's not a road trip.
Right.
They've played on the road and be able to beat the Grizzlies the other night at home. So they still, showing that they can do it maybe even without Steph Curry. But you look at tonight and LaMelo Ball coming in and James Wiseman playing a little bit more of late, at least more effectively the last couple of games at 30, the final game of the road trip in Brooklyn. He has no points or field goal attempts in the game against Memphis, but the Warriors really pleased with his defense and his impact on the game. And in 8 minutes that seemed more meaningful than the 30-point game in Brooklyn. But it raises the question, just kind of off the top here, LaMelo was picked number 3. Wiseman was picked number 2. The Hornets come in among the worst teams in the NBA. A lot of that is LaMelo being hurt, but Warriors make a mistake. I mean, it's always fun to kind of reevaluate drafts as years go on and just how things played out.
You know, it's so funny because we're talking about this today because today is one of those days that, you get those Christmas presents and then people like, well, I love it. Thank you, Dad. Oh, I've been dreaming for this. You know, 2 days later, you ask the wife, hey, where's the little guy? Oh, he went to the store to return that gift that you got him. Great. Everybody's returning gifts at this point. It's buyer's remorse, people, or even gifter's remorse, I guess, or giftee's remorse. But yeah, I don't know how you had Wiseman and Edwards and LaMelo ranked in that draft. I guess I'm the most surprised. I'm surprised a little bit by all three. I liked Edwards as a scorer, and obviously he's just been awesome, especially the second half of last year. I thought LaMelo was going to struggle more, JD, with a shot. I thought he was going to be an all-pass, no shooting kind of a guy. He's taken a lot more threes this year, and his shot looks pretty good, and it's obviously coming on. And then Wiseman, of course, has been disappointing if you thought it was going to happen overnight, and I guess maybe not disappointing if you really felt it was going to be a long-range play. I was saying this to Steinmetz as they were walking out. If you're one of those guys, JD, who was like, the Warriors had to trade Monte Ellis To clear up, you know, shots and time and space for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson back in the day when they traded Monte for Bogut, then how can you really question taking of Wiseman here when you had, you know, Jordan Poole and Steph Curry playing on the ball and you didn't have a chance at Edwards? So it's really a LaMelo versus Wiseman. Who did they make the right call? Did they make the wrong call? How do you say, oh, yeah, they had to trade Monte for Bogut, but then say, oh, they blew it by drafting Wiseman instead of LaMelo?
Yeah, it's interesting because there were so many different dynamics going on at the point in which that draft took place, and it was right before Thanksgiving. It was in the pandemic. I mean, this was the November 18th draft, not the typical June 23rd draft. And yeah, a lot of the lead up to that was, you know, yes, you knew Anthony Edwards at that point was going to Minnesota, number one overall, and Wiseman seemingly, via a lot of the reporting, had moved ahead of LaMelo in the Warriors' eyes. But as of that day, right up until that afternoon, that was when Klay Thompson and the Achilles injury popped up. It was literally that afternoon. And so there was a lot of question, do the Warriors change course now because Klay Thompson in all likelihood has sustained another year-long or what wound up being about a 14-month injury from the time that he injured it to the time he was able to come back. And it was, you know, do you reverse course? Do you change? If you were going to go Wiseman, do you now go LaMelo because you're not going to have Klay? You pair him with Steph, who's coming back, and then you figure out what you've got. The other part to it was Jordan Poole wasn't Jordan Poole yet. Now, at that point, it was the Jordan Poole that, remember, was burning out his key card at the facility during COVID when nobody was allowed in the building. And maybe he wasn't supposed to be in the building, but he was sneaking in the building because he wanted to get shots up and work on his game and really try and improve. But this was even before Poole had gone to the G League in that famous stint in the G League where he dominated and then came back and assumed a role at the end of that season, which the Warriors lost in the play-in tournament and ultimately were eliminated by Memphis. So there were a lot of things we know now about the Warriors that we didn't necessarily know on that day where they had prepared in all the lead-up to take Wiseman over Ball.
To me, it really was a simple thing. It came down to who do you want on the ball? Like, you know, when the Warriors had Monte and Steph, Monte, despite being a two-guard, was on the ball quite a bit. And didn't play. It wasn't your prototypical off the ball too. So you had Steph them coming in as a point. He was going to play on the ball. To me, it was really hard to go towards LaMelo just because LaMelo didn't have any ability to play off the ball. So if you were going to, so basically to draft him would be to take the ball out of Steph Curry's hands and make him play off the ball. And that just seemed, like a non-starter. So I think that's why I kind of lean towards Wiseman. And this story has not been written yet. I mean, James Wiseman is not what he's going to be. And I think it's always easier for guards, you know, backcourt guys to transition to the NBA than the big men with all of the footwork and all the moves that you have to have inside, all that goes into that. I just think it takes a little bit more time as a big man. And I think we should just kind of, you know, we got to be patient. And ultimately, that's the solution with James Wiseman. I think they got the right guy. And I know that's hard to say now because LaMelo has gotten to a certain point. But I do believe the Warriors will be vindicated in time. How much time is the question?
Yeah, and I mean, you look at LaMelo and you go back through, you know, 51 games in the 72-game season that he played in. Ended up starting 31 of them. He did play 75 of the 82 last year, was an all-star last year, averaged 20 points a game. I mean, that's where it looks like, wow, this kid's something special. And yeah, he's been hurt this year, only played 10 games to this point out of, what, 34, 35. So I think that's been a little bit of a problem throughout the course of his career to this point has been some of the injuries, the dynamics in play. I think there was a little bit of a, you know, Steph is the system and is the franchise and is the face. And I'm not saying this necessarily impacted the decision to not take LaMelo Ball, but I think, and you know, LaVar Ball, his dad had said, you know, he's not a big fan of Steve Kerr, didn't necessarily want him to come to Golden State because I think he wanted his son to be the premier face of a franchise that wasn't going to be happening here. Would there be, you know, something to Jordan Poole's growth being stunted by the fact that LaMelo Ball is here? It would have been really strange because I think he would have ended up starting alongside Steph Curry because Klay Thompson was out that year? Then what? Does he become a bench player at that point? Do you look to do something different with Andrew Wiggins because you want to get the three guards in the lineup? And then you've got Poole on top of that with Klay looming a year down the line. Like there's just a lot to sort through when you look at the evaluation. I think if you think LaMelo Ball was the better player, I think the Warriors do believe that they thought Wiseman was the better player. Like it wasn't in my mind, and because we always have this debate right around drafts. Do you go for the position of need versus the best overall talent? I think the Warriors believe that Wiseman was the best overall talent, but then that begs the question, now looking back on it, was that a mistake? I guess you're saying we don't really know as of yet, but the one thing I will say, I think the Warriors believed Wiseman would be farther along. As some of that's injury, some of that's just the lack of being able to get on the floor consistently, but it's also at times just looked like not the best fit with Steph and not the best fit with Draymond, which, you know, if you can't play with those two, it's hard to play with the Warriors, period.
Well, I mean, the Warriors have such high basketball intellect as a group that if you come in and you're raw and you need development in that area, you're going to look like a fish out of water. And that's exactly what it looks like with James Wiseman. You know, there's just so much development that needs to go on there that he just looks... They're worse with him. Steph's worse with him. The Warriors are a worse team with him, rebounding, defensively, offensively. I mean, but you have to. It was the long term play, and it's funny because a lot of the 49er comparisons get made between Trey and James Wiseman, and yet I see the Warriors in a unique position because the NBA regular season is eternal. And there's tons of minutes to go around. And I just think that it's just, you can develop a James Wiseman in season. Even though they've struggled with it thus far, I think it can be done. I don't know that it can be done in the NFL. Like, if you get a super raw guy, I mean, when are the...
Like
when
the Niners were going to try with Trey this year, right? The way it looked.
And it wasn't going to work. Why? Because the fans weren't going for it, the players weren't going for it, and the coaches weren't going for it. I don't know who's left, you know,
after that. And it got off to a bad start in Chicago.
It got off to a bad start. I think Trey will develop. I really have great thoughts about where he's going to wind up, but it's the NFL regular season. You only have two, three, four games max to kind of play around with. Then it's time to win and you got a team with guys like Trent Williams on it and, you know, guys who are veterans who aren't going to have that many great years ahead. You know, you had to kind of go for it this year. So I think the Niners are having a hard time. Even if Trey had stayed healthy, they would have had a hard time keeping him on the field and winning games while developing him. Well, I think the Warriors, it doesn't really matter. For me, I would say after watching the Warriors against the Celtics and watching the Warriors on Christmas Day against Memphis, I would get into it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter that the Warriors are terrible on the road. It just doesn't matter that they don't look good every night right now. It doesn't matter that they don't look great in December, because the game, they won't get decided until May. And you got just so much, you got an eternity between now and then to get better. So I have no concerns about Golden State, because I'm looking at those teams in the West, and JD, I don't believe in any of them. I don't believe in Memphis, don't believe in Phoenix, don't believe in Denver, don't believe in Dallas. As far as, can any of those teams beat Golden State in a 7-game series? I wouldn't bet on it.
I think where it becomes problematic and where I would disagree with you a little bit is I do think you got to win enough games to at least, you know, comfortably get into the playoffs. Like, to me, you don't want to be in a position.
You want to be top four?
I want to be at least top six. I ultimately want to be top four. Yes, I want to be top four. If it ends up being because of circumstances, top six, I think you can make a run there, although you're not going to have home court advantage against anybody. And to me, it's more the cumulative than can they beat any of these teams. Like, I think they could beat Memphis in a series. I think they kind of showed it again the other night on Christmas that they got a little something on Memphis when they ramp it up to the best of their abilities, even without Steph and even without Wiggins. I mean, that was a statement, I think, to the Grizzlies, like, hey, you don't want the smoke.
Right.
Even though you run your mouth like you want nothing but the smoke, you don't want the smoke because we've got a level that you guys can't reach. To me, it would be the cumulative, though, of can you beat Memphis and then beat Phoenix and then beat Denver and then beat Milwaukee or Boston or Brooklyn or whoever ends up coming out of the Eastern Conference. So to me, it's more all without home court advantage. And I know the Warriors have won a road game in every playoff series over the last decade that they've played in with Steph and Clay and Draymond. That gets brought up every year. They've won at least one road game in every single playoff series. If you don't have home court advantage, though, oftentimes that means you have to win two road games because you might slip up one at home or you're 1-1 coming back, a team gets one. And you know, typically you're not as buttoned up of a team, and that puts you in a position where you're a little bit more vulnerable. So you almost might, in some of these, have to win a couple of road games. And I think that's where you're playing longer series. And the Warriors really made hay last year. I thought a big understated reason as to why they were able to win the championship last year. You beat Denver in five. You get a little bit of a rest to lead up to the Grizzly series. You win that in six. It was hard fought. But then Dallas ends up being the team you play. You get rid of them in five, and you get that week to lead up to the final. Like, I think the little breaks after that first series and after that conference final series, as opposed to having to go six, seven, like, that takes a toll over a playoff with an older squad. So I as far as the seeding and all that, to me, it's important. You don't want to be fighting uphill. And that's why I think this homestand is important. And that win on Tuesday was important. And tonight's important for the Warriors to bring it. Like, I kind of need to see a five, six win homestand to just get back over 500 and feel a little bit better about where things are headed as far as them having a shot to make that run once Steph is back.
Okay, so you can't have both. You got the six seed. Would you rather be a six seed, but you got your rotation and you're playing well going in, or would you rather be, an eight seed? You know what I'm saying?
I want the six.
But I'm just saying, would you rather have, you can get into the playoffs. To me, it's not about the seeding. It's more about the rhythm, the rotation, and their health. If the rotation's playing well and it's ironed out, if they're playing in good rhythm and they're healthy when the playoffs start, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think this team can go through any seeding in the West.
Even if you're playing elimination games right off the top,
it's not ideal. But if the choice was that, or you aren't entering the playoffs, I could say you were the 2 seed, but your rotation's not set, you're not healthy, and you're not playing particularly good ball at the end of the year. I'd rather be a 6 seed and have my rotation be set, have my, be healthy and be, kind of starting to gel as a team than be a higher seed, but I don't have those things going on.
The irony is the Warriors kind of had that last year. They were the 3 seed, but they had been pretty bad in the second half and injured and banged up, and nobody knew what the rotation was going to be. It was a new team. Hey, what can Wiggins do in the playoffs? What can Poole do coming off the bench? And then they lock in against Denver and they just hit the ground running really all the way up until the fifth game against Memphis when they got blown out, but they were already up 3-1, so it didn't really matter. And then they come back and they close that series. Like, they were on cruise control against Denver to take the 3-0 lead. And there were a lot of question and worry and doubt about that. I think this team's a little different. Like, we saw last year, even before Klay came back, that the pieces fit and that they had enough of a veteran presence with Otto Porter, with Gary Payton II, even Bielitsa here and there, where you saw what the high end could be. In a blend. You never saw it with all this, but you never worried about Klay, Steph, and Draymond together, right? Because you knew they had it locked in from champions past. But the rest of it, you really didn't know, and they flipped the switch. And they were the 3 seed, but didn't, there were all these questions, and it ended up working out for them. I think I would prefer to be in that position, whereas now you're looking at all the young players and what can they do. And the biggest takeaway for me off of Sunday was the young players actually contributed against a good team in a win, which, I think you could count the number of times on one hand, maybe on a couple of fingers that's happened.
Oh, it's hugely important, too, to JD, because, I don't think they can get there if Wiseman, Moody, Kuminga are all basically total zeros come the playoffs. Somebody of those three guys, and I probably should throw Baldwin in there because I think Baldwin's got an incredibly refined looking shot. I thought the watching the ball come off of his hand, he's skilled. He's got a great outside shot, so maybe he works his way into the rotation. I just think they got 5 young guys, 5 relative babies on this team. They got to get a couple of them in the rotation on a regular basis. Now, that being said, I don't have any real respect for any of these teams out west. Though I did see Dallas the other day, and Dallas is a lot better team than the team that the Warriors beat last year in the playoffs. Because now they got Tim Hardaway's kid, and he's healthy. I mean, they had him last year, but he wasn't healthy. But to me, getting Christian Wood, you know, big man who can run the floor, who can shoot the ball from outside, that's a really nice piece. Dallas just, to me, looks a little bit better. You know, actually quite a bit better than what I remembered them last year in the playoffs. Though there were people that thought that Dallas was going to upset the Warriors in the playoffs.
Steiny.
No, but I mean, some people say Denver would be the team they fear. I kind of fear Dallas.
Yeah, I think Denver would be a team I would fear more if I was more confident in Jamal Murray coming back off the ACL. I mean, there's nights where he's looked tremendous. There's nights where he's looked like a guy coming off an ACL still that's not quite as dynamic as he would be had he not sustained that injury. I mean, Jokic is out of this world as always, and Michael Porter Jr. is kind of a, you know, he can shoot it and fill it up, but he's not a great defender. I'm a
Denver, Aaron Gordon. How about Aaron Gordon on Christmas?
Yeah, unbelievable. No, that was
unbelievable.
They're a well-coached team, obviously, with Michael Malone. I'm a huge Michael Malone guy. So I think Denver would be that team potentially that might be the natural, you know, team that's on the ascent as far as having all of their young guys kind of, you know, going through the process of, you know, hey, you make it first round, second round, conference finals, and now it's time to maybe make the jump. Memphis, we'll see. They run their mouth so much. I mean, the Warriors would want to take them out. The Clippers, we'll see. I'm kind of with you on Dallas. They were a slow starting team last year. They really lingered around 500 throughout the first half, and then the second half, they got it together and were playing really good basketball into the playoffs, and they were able to make a run. So I think that's a team to keep an eye on. I just want to avoid the dreck of the play-in tournament and these one-and-done games.
Yeah.
Like, I'm almost with you where I can give on the home court advantage and say, all right, it doesn't have to. Like, even home court in one series, I think, makes a big difference.
I thought you meant top four, but you're basically saying top six.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give on that. I really want top four, but I think there's a significant difference between top six, given how, you know, jumbled up it is. I mean, you said it. I mean, if the Warriors were six and they're playing Memphis at three in the first round, because here's the other part of playing a team in the first round, you're not going to be tired at that point like you would be if you were playing them in a conference finals. Like, sure. I would, if I were the Grizzlies, I'd much rather play the Warriors in the conference finals where they had already had to play a couple of series as the younger team. If that's a first round series, you're going to get, in all likelihood, a relatively fresh Warriors team. Like, somebody else may get them down the line because of what you took out of them, but they may still beat you if you're Memphis. And obviously, you know, that would be something the Warrior fans would truly, truly enjoy.
Well, you know, and then I kind of wonder, what is Golden State going to look like in the playoffs this year without Payton? Just because he was that defensive stopper. And I don't know that they've got a player that, you know, I like DiVincenzo, but they're different.
Yeah.
He can't really replicate that stopper mode that CP2 offered. So we'll see. And then of course, the trade deadline. Are the Phoenix Suns going to wind up with Kevin Durant? You know, I mean, that changes the dynamic. I mean, if suddenly Durant is in the West on the Suns, depending on what goes back in return, that could shake up the playoff picture.
And honestly, I mean, I think that's, you can, the Suns are a team that could make a move. I don't think it's going to be Durant, though, now, because they've won 9 in a row. Brooklyn, 22-12. They're all the way up to within 2 games of the top spot in the Eastern Conference. They just beat Cleveland. They've been playing excellent basketball. They bottomed out about a month ago in Sacramento, that TNT game where the Kings put, what, 150 points on them or something like that?
Yeah.
And it was just embarrassing. Well, since then, I think they've lost, I think they're 18-3 or something like that since that game. So they're playing much better basketball and are all the way up to third. So I don't think Durant at this point is going anywhere. 888-957-9570. John Dickinson and Larry Kruger, 888-957-9570. That's the number to give us a call or shoot us a text. Xfinity mobile text line is always being monitored in here by the both of us. You got your heckler? You find your heckler today?
Not yet, but I'm sure there'll be one.
I'm sure there'll be
heckle away, yeah.
I'm sure there'll be a few of them. And I want to come back to the Wiseman LaMelo conversation as well, just a little bit, because I think some would be quick to say, hey, the Warriors made a mistake. Like, how can you not say the Warriors made a mistake? Wiseman's barely done anything. LaMelo is an all-star last year. And really the only thing that's kept LaMelo down at all has been injury in that first year and this year to this point. But there's something to be said, and we can get into this coming back. There's something to be said for the Warriors won a title without him. and like, in the sense that if you win a title with a guy that obviously was too injured to play last year, like, you can't really call it a mistake if you're, you know what I mean? If you're good enough to withstand not having him, like, there's nothing that says they're automatically a better team than a team that won the title. If they had LaMelo Ball,
there
in the
was
mix.
A parade.
Like, you they won so, an NBA championship, and it basically it was. I mean, James Wiseman didn't play a second last year, so you get a little bit of, you know, more leeway to work him back, obviously, and develop him. I do think that they thought he would be farther along and able to contribute more than he has. I think they thought more games like Sunday's game, where he's out there, he's rebounding, he's altering shots. You know, not trying to do too much. I think that was the template for all of the young guys, but especially Wiseman. I think they thought that they could have plugged him into 10 to 15 minutes a game with play like that, and it just hasn't happened to this point.
You know, you think about all the young, talented big men that have entered this league, and it's pretty rare that a young, talented big man goes to a title contender right out of the chute. So that right there kind of complicated the equation. And, you know, in some ways you look at that and you go, oh, it'll be great. You know, I mean, how could it not work out? You already got a great team. You don't need much from him, but it's, you've got a pecking order. You've got a way that you play. You've got a culture. You're not going to interrupt that culture for one player, and the development becomes complicated. But I always wonder about the off the field, off the court stuff with LaMelo. What if LaMelo wasn't on the ball? What if he was playing on the ball some of the time, off the ball some of the time, and then LaVar started barking about it to Kerr? See, and, you know, all of a sudden now you've got this dynamic where you got Poole that plays best on the ball, Steph that plays best on the ball, and LaMelo who played best on the ball, and they're all on the same team. And how does that work? And is LaVar chirping? Is he going public? And what's the reaction? So it would have been different for sure. LaMelo looks awesome, but all the other elements of it have to be factored in as well.
No doubt, and I think the Warriors would never admit this, but I do think they didn't want to deal with the LaVar Ball component.
I was with him. I was absolutely with him on that.
So, yeah, we'll get into it. We'll keep it rolling. 888-957-9570. He's Larry. I'm JD. The 95.7 The Game merch store is live. James in Concord. He ordered a Relevant sweatshirt today. You can get yours now at 957thegameshop.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast. Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. John Dickinson and Larry Kruger sitting in for Damon and Ratto here on a Tuesday. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Let's get to a quick text here on the Xfinity Mobile text line. Also, let everybody know we do have Peter King coming up as well at 3 o'clock. We'll switch gears. We'll get into some football. A lot to talk about with the 49ers as they gear up for the Raiders in Vegas on New Year's Day. Two seeds still in play for the 49ers. So all that's coming up here at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. But I wanted to get to this text on the Warriors and LaMelo Ball as he comes in tonight with Charlotte. And, of course, going back to that 2020 draft where Wiseman was taken at 2, LaMelo Ball taken at 3. And the 925 just asking the question, would LaMelo Ball flourish with the Warriors? And the fact that, he wouldn't be starting over Steph and Clay. I know you've added Poole into that mix as well. Another one is just getting into the LaMelo thinking of the trade-off of his offensive production being on the roster, but then maybe Poole's development isn't what it has become because of that. So I think, you know, just two different angles to the whole what if the Warriors had gone down the LaMelo route and how it would have, in that year leading up to the championship year, maybe changed the course of history.
Well, I think they would be better. Why? Because I think Camelo's a baller. I mean, he can play.
You think they win the title last year?
Yeah, I think they probably do. Because I think Camelo would have given them another ball handler, or would have freed Steph up to play a little bit more off the ball. It wouldn't have looked the same. And there would have been challenges, as we mentioned, with LeVar and his personality. He's kind of bombastic, and he's verbal, and he's out there. But Wiseman gave them zero, and LaMelo would have given them something. So I think I think you could say they would have won a title. It would have been different. As far as, I don't know that Jordan would be developing the same way. I think the Warriors, if they had LaMelo, would be probably, I mean, they're already one of the most fun teams in the league to watch, but I think they would be even more fun if they had LaMelo, because I think LaMelo would be throwing lobs and there would be all kinds of open floor, sharing of the basketball. I don't know that his dad would have been happy, though, because I don't think he would have played as much.
How do you think they handle the Steph and LaMelo have played together for, you know, the whole 2020-2021 season and then the first couple of months of last season, and then Klay Thompson's coming back? And like, if LaMelo's playing at close to an all-star kind of a level alongside Steph, because I don't think there's any doubt those two would have been paired together, because we didn't know who Jordan Poole was going to be at the point in which LaMelo would have been drafted. So those two would have played together. They would have been the starting backcourt. They would have been the starting backcourt in all likelihood last year. How do you think that plays out, where LaMelo's playing at a high level, Steph is obviously Steph, and then Klay Thompson's coming back?
I mean, I think ultimately,
and Klay wasn't going to be coming off the bench, I'll say that.
Everybody besides Kerr is a winner. You know what I mean? I think we would have won. I think the team would have won. I think Kerr's job would have become that much more difficult if LaMelo had been here, because I think he would have had to figure it out, right? He would have had to somehow blend, you know, another guy with a massive ego, but also with games. So,
but is he as effective if he has to, you know, not? Because I think you could make the case that part of LaMelo's success is he is the guy. There's no real expectations in Charlotte. He's one of the most popular players in the league. He can just do whatever he wants. If he wants to shoot it 20 times, he can. If he wants to be a facilitator, he can. If he wants to defend, he can. Like, and we know sometimes the Warriors, young players, it takes them a minute to fit in, even the guards.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It would, the dynamic, one, it would have been an awesome watch. But two, it complicates things. It really does. And I think it would have been a huge challenge for Kerr and the coaching staff. And I think there would have been a lot of games where you're like, you know, where there things popped up because of, you know, usage and how the thing is blending together. There would have been a whole gamut of other issues, let's just say. But I think they would have been an incredibly fun team to watch.
It's interesting. It really is. And especially 2 years ago. I think, you know, last year, when I look back and knowing what we now know about last year's team and how it all just came together and the pieces fit and Jordan Poole had developed to where he was awesome in the time that he filled in for Klay as the starter alongside Steph, averaging, what, 18, 19 a game, you know, coming off before he was coming off the bench, but in that lineup, and then shifts to the bench role, ends up starting at the end of the year. I just wonder, you know, now, again, knowing what we know about how that year played out, 2 years ago, I'm with you. 2 years ago, the Warriors, you know, the building wasn't full because of COVID, and there was just a weird deal. Kelly Oubre didn't fit, and Wiseman was playing a lot, and then he wasn't, and then he was, and he was hurt. And like that team was the opposite of fun to watch for the most part, other than Steph being incredible, you know, pretty much from the beginning of the year and holding them up to a point where they could get that seven seed and go into the play-in tournament. So I'm kind of with you on that, but I feel like the 2 years ago would have changed in some form or fashion the context of last year. And last year, last year was just perfect.
I mean, I think another interesting angle on this thing is, how would last year have gone if James Wiseman had not been hurt? Would James Wiseman have just been sitting there, DNP, Steve Kerr's decision?
I think so.
Or would they have been trying to work him in? Would there have been pressure to work him in? Or is he literally just sitting on the bench?
I think they, at every opportunity that they had last year to be cautious with his injury or push his return back, or, you know, the joke, right, was always, well, he's ramping up. He's ramping up. Wiseman's ramping up. He's ramping up. He's ramping up to get back to practice. He's ramping up to get back to maybe go get in some G League games. And I want to say he went to one or two G League games, and then there was some knee soreness that popped up, and he ended up having to have, what, another procedure. And then at that point it was, well, can he come back at the end of the year? And the Warriors just very early on at that point said, nope, he's not coming back. And I think at every point in which, because of the momentum that they had built up without him, and knowing how it didn't really work with Steph and didn't really work with Draymond from the year before, I think they used the injury as a means to protect him, obviously, first and foremost, because you didn't want him to be in a position where he was hurt for this year when you truly wanted to try and develop him. But I think they took every turn they could to use the injury as a means to just kick the can down the line as far as when he had to try to even be integrated into the mix, because they frankly didn't want to deal with it. They had too good of a thing going with what they had.
And he made him worse
because he made it. And there was data from the year before that would tell you he made him worse, and you don't want to. I don't think Steve Kerr and the Warriors organization wanted to deal with the fact that there might be pressure to play James Wiseman. So they just took it off the table and used the injury concern as a reason, hey, we're doing what's best for the kid. He's young. He's got a long way to go. We're going to make sure he's absolutely healthy before he gets out there.
Well, I mean, it really is interesting because it makes you wonder, would he have gotten some run in the playoffs at all, or would they had you know, come to their evaluation that, you know what, we'll shelve this until next year, and then would that have changed the vibe? If you know, it's one thing to be sitting there rooting on your teammates because you're not healthy and they are, and you're making a run at a title. It's a different thing if you're healthy and ready and they're not using you. That would have changed the whole dynamic. So I tend to think that they would have gotten it done last year, but it would have changed things. And if they had tried to attempt to play him throughout the playoff run, that would have changed things as well. And who's to say that it would have been changed for the better?
I don't think he would have played at all. I think if he had come back in the playoffs, I think if he had been able physically to come back in March, let's say, I think it would have been similar to the way it was at the beginning of the season, let's say those first 10 games or so before he got sent out. I think they would have tried to carve out 5 minutes a half for him just to see how it goes, to get his feet wet. You know, at that point they were banged up, so they didn't have the full team. You know, the team that had gone 41-13 at the beginning wasn't the team that they were playing at that point. So I think they could have got him a little bit of run. But had it played out like those first 10 games had played out, I think they either would have shut him down due to injury at that point, you know, just come up with something. Maybe he would have gotten hurt, you know, at that point, or they just would have said, hey, he's a youngster, he's a DNP, we've got other players that are capable of getting after it.
One thing I want to see the rest of this year is I want to see him with the Warriors, not in the G League, and getting some run nightly and improving. And working towards becoming, you know, who knows, the eighth guy or the ninth guy in the rotation, but in the rotation, because I think when you look at the finals and you're sitting there, is it going to be Boston? Is it going to be Milwaukee? You're probably going to need a little bit more size. You're probably going to need James Wiseman in some capacity. So I'm glad that they've used the G League. It seems like the G League's been a positive. I loved what I saw from Brooklyn, but they got destroyed in that game.
It was the quintessential. Hey, Wiseman's got 30 and you're down 40.
Like, but even that was a positive, because you know what? Without that game, if they ever get to a point this year where they just make the evaluation, you know what? We're going to try to trade James, because there's all kinds of rumors around the league that the Warriors are going to make some combination of Kuminga, Moody, or Wiseman available to other teams at the trade deadline. And they're going to listen. at least if he's got a couple of, even if they're in blowouts, if you got a couple of games in your game log that showed that you had 30 points, yeah, at least I think that helps his trade value on some level. You guys still got to project, and the team trading firm is going to have to project, but at least there's something to look at. And maybe I think it ups his value. I really do.
888-957-9570. He's Larry Krueger. I'm John Dickinson. We're in for Damon and Ratto here on this Tuesday afternoon. Let's go to the phones. Let's get Dave in Fremont in here on the phone lines at 95.7 The Game. What's going on today, Dave?
Hey, guys. Happy holiday season. Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah.
But I am calling a little bit disgruntled today. Why is everybody so polarized on James? I don't get this, man. He's a 20-year-old. I'd like to see you guys get in the, on the court and score 30 against a half of what Brooklyn is at the moment. They're exactly. Really good players. And to score 30 is an achievement. Someone was looking for him in the paint, so he made shots. That's what you're supposed to do. Then the next day, playing within what he's supposed to play. What do you mean? Why are you setting up these confines for, he's got to play within his given, a moment like? That's horrible. You guys are like totally cutting him down. Don't do that. This guy's growing. He's an uncut gem, and he has the ability to change the dynamic of the Warriors because we need someone to throw to in the middle. We need a big man, and he is growing into a man. He's starting to get hair on his face, thank goodness. And now he's going to grow and get
thanks,
better,
Dave,
guys.
Dave, we'll let you go on that. Go ahead, Larry.
I'm not cutting him down at all.
No.
I mean, I like the guy. I think he's a tremendous prospect. It's just a matter of, can you do two things, right? Can you win the games and also develop them? Mm-hmm. JD and I don't view this the same way. I don't think NBA regular season matters at all. And I think the Warriors, with all their experience, can win the title out of any seed. Includes
7, 8, 9, 10.
I don't care if you're in the play-in tournament.
Right.
This Warrior team has been there. Everybody else, it's like the map for the gold. The Warriors have the map, and everybody else is just kind of walking around. You know, the Warriors know exactly how much energy needs to be expended, how much do you need in the tank. They know how to get to the finish line. Everybody else is just kind of like, well, we're hoping to play well enough, and we think we're pretty good, and we'll have to see. The Warriors know how to get to the finish line. So when you have that knowledge, I think that's a massive advantage. And I'm not afraid about winning. You know, I'm not afraid if I'm a Warrior fan, and I am, from being the 4 seed, the 1 seed, the 8 seed, the 10 seed. Just get in. Just get in. You can't obviously win the title if you're not in the playoffs. Just get in, especially, and I totally go agree with what JD's saying. I'd rather be a higher seed. But when we look at how bad the Warriors have been on the road, I mean, just destroyed in some of these games, non-competitive. And then you look at the way they played Boston. They circled the wagons somehow.
Yeah.
They get Memphis. They were huge underdogs on Christmas. They circled the wagons. They didn't have their two best players, in my opinion, on the floor, and they still beat Memphis. So they know how to turn it up. They know the level they need to get to. They know where the gold is. So I'm not worried about this. I agree with the caller. I would rather see the Warriors develop their young guys, all 5 of them, but at least 2 or 3 of them this year. And then I don't care about the seeding. It doesn't matter to me what seed you are, but get 2 of those young guys in the rotation playing well. If they get to the playoffs with 2 of those young guys in the rotation playing well, my only question, JD, I think they rampage the West. It's Boston or Milwaukee.
Sure.
They're going to go to the finals. Can they beat Boston? Can they beat Milwaukee? That, to me, is the question of the entire season.
Yeah, and I'd even throw Brooklyn in there as well, with as they're playing.
Throw Brooklyn?
Because they're unbelievable the last month plus. They've figured it out. They fired Steve Nash. It seems like Jacques Vaughn's got him going in a different direction. It seems
totally.
Like Kyrie and Durant are back in. Like we didn't know whether they wanted to play in a given night or not, or whether they were locked into what Brooklyn's
doing. And they're volatile and awesome offensively.
Yeah, exactly. That would be their downfall, is they may not be able to defend at a championship level, but they at least are committed to playing every night, which is something that wasn't there before. I think you're spot on with
if they definitely want one, and I think Kuminga is the one that they've circled as the guy that's got the best shot
to be in the rotation
consistently. And I think they like his athleticism, his body type, his ability to be a defender, really, and a rebounder. But I think they have almost tried to use him a little bit like they've used Gary Payton the second, where offensively he's somebody that can, you know, shoot a corner three if the team leaves him open, or, you know, get a dunk in the context of the offense, or get a little short post where you can, you know, put one move on and maybe get fouled, right? Teams really have a hard time with it. But I think they've told him, do less offensively. Let the points find you in the context of what we're doing. Go hound a point guard. Go hound a wing, and just, you know, use your length, use your athleticism, and be more concerned about defense and rebounding as opposed to the offense and getting it out at the top of the key and putting it on the deck and trying to go buy somebody or shoot threes. And I think that I think he struggled on the road trip, but prior to that, he had a good 5-6 game stretch where he was doing that. I thought he did that in the game on Sunday in a big-time way. I think Wiseman, for the first time, Larry, on Sunday, 30-point game aside from Brooklyn, that game on Sunday was the first time where Wiseman had that kind of game like they were looking for from Kuminga, where it was all of the other things. He gets out there 8 minutes, he's got 5 boards. He didn't have a block, but he changed 3 or 4 shots. He didn't foul like we've seen him foul when he's in those positions. It looked really for the first time defensively like he had a clue. The Warriors would tell you they don't want to throw it to him in the post and let him try to go to work and operate, because that, right or wrong, isn't their system, but they do think there are ways he can succeed. And I think the Memphis game is the template, you know, far more than the Brooklyn game.
The only thing about Kuminga that worries me, I mean, he's an incredible athlete, maybe one of the best in the entire league. But he just doesn't bring it all the time.
That's true.
I mean, you know, I'm watching that Philly game, and I just looked up his...
It happened on the road trip. Yeah, you're right.
29 minutes of game action against the Sixers. He had no rebounds.
Right. And that was the game.
You can't have no rebounds in 29 minutes when you're as athletic. You're the most athletic guy in the entire floor. You play 29 minutes, you grab 0 rebounds. That can't happen. And that happens too much. He's got to be, you're right, get your points in transition. Don't worry about, you know, you're shooting the basketball. Defend with, you know, with aggression and rebound the basketball. But he doesn't necessarily do that all the time.
No, he does it in stretches, typically when his minutes are taken away. And then it's for a couple of games, and everybody kind of wonders why. But if you're paying attention like you are, you know why. And then he gets another chance. And then for a 3-4 game stretch, he plays that way again. The Philly game was a turning point, because he really didn't play well in the first half of the Indiana game when Steph got hurt before that. And he played better in the second half. The Philly game, he was a blank and really didn't have a great trip from that point on, and started to maybe put it together a little bit again against Memphis. There's always this constant, he plays 3 or 4 games where he does it the way the Warriors want to do it, and it's almost like he gets a little content and a little lackadaisical and doesn't bring it in the way that they want him to. So they got to sit him down for a couple of years. And that if that's an issue consistently, then he's not going to be somebody that's going to be trusted in a playoff series to play significant minutes. And if he's not, that's when the Warriors have to start to look toward, well, maybe they do need another wing, you know, off the roster to come in and play some minutes, because you can't wonder what you're going to get from a young player on a night in, night out basis in a playoff series, especially a playoff series where you're in all likelihood to be the underdog a couple of times, you know, as the lower seed, having to win games on the road. Let's sneak in a couple of calls here before the top of the hour, and we get to Peter King at 888-957-9570. Let's go to Steel Toe in Millbrae. What's going on, Steel Toe?
Thank you, JD. Thank you, Larry. Yeah, I kind of disagree. I don't really see Wiseman and Kuminga helping. I don't think they can help even as good as JTA and Bielitsa. Like, right now, if they went to the playoffs and played Denver, Nikola Jokic will go right through Wiseman and Kuminga like hot knife through butter. And I don't think we appreciate how well did JTA and Bielitsa play defense and rebound, and how good they were in passing the ball to the shooters. And these young guys can't do that. I was hoping Bob Myers would try to figure something out, but I don't think he's going to bring in any savvy veterans that will be like JTA and Bielitsa, and these young guys are going to tire out the starters in the playoffs. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. That ultimately could be the Warriors' demise in this thing. I think that's definitely a possibility. The other, just real quick, thing about the roster composition, the Warriors do have an open roster spot. And not to get too bogged down in Ty Jerome and Anthony Lamb, who have played well.
They played well this last game.
And played well the last game and have helped the Warriors in some games. You know, if you can, you can convert one of them to a regular contract to make them eligible for the playoffs. If you convert, you can't convert both unless you cut somebody, or unless somebody is off the roster or traded away. And not really a conversation for now, but if you're looking to add from the outside and you feel you also need to convert both guys, or even one guy, you have to take something away from the roster. And obviously a trade, you'd be taking something off the roster. But there is a little bit of gymnastics with the 15 and the plus two as far as the two ways go that you'd have to maneuver.
Yeah, and then we don't know exactly who's going to show up on the buyout market. You know,
right.
And to me, the guy that I'm kind of keeping my eye on the buyout market, because I think he would just be an awesome addition for Golden State, is Vucevic.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Vucevic, yeah, is maybe, if he's bought out, he might be the best guy in the history of the buyout market, right, J.D.? I mean, this guy can shoot the rock. He's borderline all-star. Didn't he play in an all-star game at some point?
He may.
For Orlando?
I think he may have, yeah.
Vucevic can flat-out shoot it with range, and he's a veteran, and if the Bulls are going to buy him out, man, that guy could absolutely make a huge difference. I kind of agree that Wiseman will struggle with Jokic, but everybody's going to struggle with Jokic. My thing with Kuminga is I would show him on the ball defenders of yesteryear.
Yes.
Show him Rodman. Show him Michael Cooper. Show him guys who are just harassing guys on the perimeter, and just say, do that. Do that the rest of the year. And you do anything else besides that, it's gravy. Just start locking guys down, because he's got the athleticism, if he committed to it, to do it.
Let's get Mike in San Jose in here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Mike, you're on with JD and Larry.
Hey, fellas, how's it going? So
good.
I've seen this movie before, and I don't know why. I guess you could say the new Warrior fans, the new fan base, They're over here crying and, oh, we're losing these games and this and that. You know what? Like last year, after the All-Star break, I'm pretty sure the Warriors were getting touched up. And I remember all the fake fans crying and saying, oh, no, look, we're losing to this team. We're losing to that team. If this team hasn't proven to everybody by now that they could just flip the switch and they could do their thing, I mean, I don't understand what everybody's crying about. We are not going to get anything close to the number one or number two seed. The Warriors are looking to creep into the playoffs, and then they're going to run the table. And that's just how it is. They know what time it is. I'm a real original Warrior fan. I see this. I see the way they're playing possum. They played everybody last year. They're playing everyone again this year. They're only five to eight games out of first place. All it takes is for them to go on the run at the end of the season, win eight games in a row, next thing you know, they're a three or a four seed, and then everybody's praising the Warriors, talking about how great they are.
Thanks, Mike. Let's jump in right there, because we're up against it a little bit. Look, last year they were 41-13. Like, we knew they had a 41-13 in them. We knew they had an 18-2 in them. We don't know that about this team. There's different players on this team. They can flip the switch to a certain extent. Is it a level to get them all the way to a title? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, last year they did it. I think the caller's right, but I would just say that they're going to have to get something out of the kids. You got five guys, I think, on this roster that are 22 or younger. A couple of those guys have to be good, consistent members of the rotation for them to get it done.
All right, 1 hour in the books. We got 3 hours to come. Peter King joins us next as we are presented by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.